Supporting WHYY, the Rutgers-Camden MBA degree allows for specializations in critical areas such as finance, international business, marketing, entrepreneurship, and others. Evening and Saturday classes are held at the Rutgers-Camden campus and Camden County College. An information session is on Wednesday, August 5th at 6 p.m. at the Rutgers-Camden campus. Learn more at mba.rutgers.edu or 856-225-6452. The Rutgers School of Business, Camden. Expect more. Be more.
Two of the big developments in Philadelphia this week impact listeners well beyond our region. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. 11-term Congressman Shaka Fatah faces federal corruption charges, and plans continue in advance of the papal visit during the last weekend of September. Joining me on this Friday's Reporters Roundtable are reporters Dave Davies and Katie Culinary. Dave, let's start with you. You've been following this Shaka Fatah 85-page indictment. Lots of details. How does it move forward next?
Well, Fatah and his co-defendants will have court appearances probably next week, at which they will presumably enter not guilty pleas. And I will be looking at, in particular, the three co-defendants that are involved, allegedly involved with Fatah, in this complicated set of transactions to repay $600,000 of an illegal campaign loan using charitable and federal funds. If you look at the indictment, there's not that much detail about Fatah being directly involved and directly apprised of these transactions. The feds may have more information than is in the indictment, but I am certain that the authorities would like to get some of those three co-defendants, alleged co-conspirators, to come in, plead guilty, and cooperate. And the general rule in these things is if you're part of a conspiracy, the first person to come and plead gets the best deal.
Nonetheless, Fatah says he will continue to serve. This could take quite a long time. He is a powerful congressman at this point, serving for some two decades, and it's meant a lot for Philadelphia. What kind of vacuum would this leave for the city?
Well, you're right. It is big. I mean, Congress is an institution where seniority really matters on all kinds of things, on influence, on legislation and funding. So that will be a loss to the city. But you're right. There's a huge political hole here. And I know for a fact that there's already a poll being conducted about voter preferences on a potential replacement. Names like Michael Nutter being floated, Vincent Hughes, the state senator, many, many others. And I think it's anticipated that assuming Fatah continues to fight this, as he promises to do, that next April, when he's up for re-election, he will have opposition in the Democratic primary.
Perhaps as well known as Shaka Fatah are Sam Katz and Bill Green, and both of them collectively were in the news also this week.
Right. This was sort of a stillborn effort to create a viable third-party movement in Philadelphia. Bill Green, the former city councilman, current member of the School Reform Commission, wanted Katz to join him in running for city council as independents this fall. Green felt that if they were together, they would have a better chance of winning and better chance of having an impact, creating a kind of a critical mass of independent policy thinking in city council.
And Katz was at least intrigued.
He was intrigued. In the end, he decided at this point in his life, it doesn't make sense. Green wasn't going to go without him.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies. And now let's get the latest on preparations for the papal visit. Katie Culinary, there is plenty of frustration among residents, business owners, even media types like us over the lack of information about logistics for the visit. What are people saying?
While many are excited for the papal visit, Dave, it's definitely causing a lot of anxiety. My colleague Erin Moselle actually talked this week to a pregnant woman who's going to deliver her baby in Center City. She's due the weekend that Pope Francis is here, and she wants to know if she's going to even be able to get to the hospital. One thing we absolutely know about the papal visit is that most of Center City is going to be blocked off to vehicular traffic. That is something that Mayor Nutter has actually confirmed at this point. And, you know, so for people who live in and around the area, folks are starting to wonder, how are we going to live our lives and do things like deliver our babies?
You have us thinking about hospital access. How about local businesses and universities?
I've talked to some people in the hotel industry, and while many might think, you know, this has to be a boon for anybody operating a hotel in Center City right now, there are a lot of logistical questions that they just can't answer. How are they going to get food services, food deliveries to these hotels? Employees, where are they going to stay if all these hotels are booked up with, you know, media being flown in from around the country to report on this event, with organizers for the event and with visitors? visitors coming to the city to see Pope Francis. So there's a lot of questions for them as well. Drexel announced today that they're rescheduling classes for the weekend of the papal visit. That's Friday to Sunday, the last weekend of September. But they're working to keep the university open for students who live here all the time. Here's Vice Provost Janet Fleetwood.
We have not yet made any announcements or decisions about whether or not the university will actually be closed. In fact, it probably won't be because we are committed to having, you know, the gym and the library and food services and lots of other things available for our students, especially those who live on campus.
Okay, so which entity is charged with ultimately answering all these logistical questions?
Ultimately, the Secret Service is in charge, Dave. Pope Francis is a head of state, Vatican City. It's a national special security event. The agency actually sent out a press release last night saying that Philadelphia will be open for business during the papal visit. They're not pressuring businesses to close, nor did they tell SEPTA to limit public transportation for the weekend, which it is doing very heavily. And that's also causing some anxiety.
Well, at least we do have some firmer sense of how these SEPTA special rail passes will roll out.
That's right. About 2 weeks ago now, the SEPTA website crashed because the demand was so high for these passes. There's only 175,000 of them available, and the website just, you know, completely shut down. So SEPTA suspended sales until they could come up with a new plan. Then this week, they came out with their new plan, which is that they're having an online lottery this coming Monday. It'll start at 12:01 a.m. and run for 24 hours. Everybody will have the same odds of getting up to 10 of these passes. They cost 10 bucks each. And then after that lottery is closed, SEPTA will notify the winners on August 6th, and then people will have 3 days to actually pay for their passes.
So trying to put this all together, where can listeners go to make better sense of all we've spoken about?
Well, first of all, the World Meeting of Families website has a lot of information, and so does our own website at newsworks.org. We've put together a frequently asked questions document that sort of lines out what we do know and what we don't know yet about the papal visit, and we're updating that regularly as more information leaks out and kind of putting that into context for people. And you can also get in touch with us if you have any questions of your own that you would like us to get answered for you.
Ideally, more and more entries in the What We Do Know column.
Ideally, yes.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you, Dave.
WHYY's Katie Culinary on Reporters Roundtable. Common law marriage was abolished in Pennsylvania in 2005. But any such marriage that predates that change still has legal standing. WHYY's Laura Benchoff has the story of a same-sex widow who's finally had her marriage recognized in the eyes of the law.
Sabrina Maurer and Kimberly Underwood were friends in college during the 80s, but they didn't click romantically until a chance meeting in a Philadelphia hospital years later. Here's Maurer.
I was working at the hospital of the University of Pennsylvania as a pharmacy resident, and I noticed Kim's name in the computer.
Underwood, who had a congenital heart defect, was someone else's patient. The two reconnected, then became a couple and had a commitment ceremony in 2001. They stayed together until Underwood died in 2013, about 6 months before gay marriage became legal in Pennsylvania. This week, a Bucks County judge ruled that their relationship counts as a common law marriage that is, quote, valid and enforceable.
This weekend, I am literally going to take the paper that the decision is on and go up to the top of the hill in our backyard to Kim's favorite spot, which is in fact where she wanted some of her ashes sprinkled. And I'm going to read her the decision.
The ruling has practical as well as emotional payoff for Maurer. It means she can access some spousal benefits. Family lawyer Helen Casal says the decision could have a ripple effect on other same-sex couples.
If they can establish themselves as common law married, then that's a big difference with respect to benefits, with respect to tax consequences.
But self-described Philly gay lawyer Angela Giampolo disagrees with the Bucks judge, saying the ruling may be on the right side of history, but is wrong on the law. She says when common law marriage was allowed in Pennsylvania, it clearly applied only to a man and woman. For WHYY, I'm Laura Benchoff.
What does it take to launch a successful startup? A prominent venture capital firm is shedding some light on the subject. And from WHYY's Todd Bookman, here's more on a new report from the group First Round Capital.
First Round is based in the heart of startup country, San Francisco, but it does have offices in New York and West Philly. The company has scored some big prizes in its first 10 years, including early investments in ride-sharing company Uber and eyeglass retailer Warby Parker. The firm decided to take a look back on its first 300 or so ventures and see if the winners had common formulas. It boiled down its findings to 10 main themes. And first on the list is that startups with female co-founders outperformed ones run by all men. And not just by a little, by 63%.
Over the past few years, we've seen more people talking about the issue, more people recognizing that it is an issue, that women are left out of these spaces and sometimes kept out of these spaces.
This is Corinne Warnsheis, executive director of Girl Develop It, a nonprofit that teaches web coding to women nationwide. She says women bring different experiences which can better shape a project.
It's having that diversity of thought and perspective that will increase your potential to create better products for more people.
Along with women on the team, First Round also finds it pays to be young. When the average age of entrepreneurs is under 25, the companies did 30% better. Another key factor is apparently book smarts. Ivy Leaguers, along with Stanford, MIT, and Caltech grads, lead more successful companies. First Round is quick to note its findings shouldn't be taken as gospel, and the company itself may want to look at its own makeup. The seven partners listed on its website are all men. For WHYY News, I'm Todd Bookman.
Turning to this evening's headlines, a lawsuit is filed against Amtrak over the death of a technology executive when a speeding train derailed in Philadelphia. Rachel Jacobs was one of eight people killed May 12th when the train entered a sharp curve at more than twice the 50-mile-an-hour speed limit. The horse racing industry's focus will be on New Jersey this weekend as Triple Crown winner American Pharoah runs in the $1.75 million Haskell Invitational at Monmouth Park. But the big race isn't expected to provide much help overall for the problems plaguing the industry in the state, where attendance and betting are falling. 89 degrees, clear skies on Independence Mall. It's 6:18. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Clear skies overnight, falling back to 72 degrees. Tomorrow, bright sunshine in the morning. Partly sunny in the afternoon, Saturday's high 92. Sunday, mostly sunny, high around 90 degrees. For Monday, intervals of sun and clouds, high once again in the low 90s. Still ahead, a new documentary highlights the hidden life of a nationally known poet and activist.
She didn't think it was important that people knew about her personal life. To her, that wasn't an important part of her art or her activism. I mean, we didn't always agree with that.
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Karen Treatment Center supports WHYY. Is someone you care about struggling, losing interest in activities they loved? Changes like these can be a sign of drug and alcohol abuse. As a behavioral health care and addiction treatment center, Karen helps families understand when professional help is warranted, offering therapies that restore wellness in body, mind, and spirit. A confidential assessment is available at 855-894-4325 or at karen.org. That's Caron.org.
What's up? I'm Shad, the host of Q, your radio headquarters for everything arts, culture, entertainment, and ideas. From indie rock to neoclassical, the big screen to the art house, Q does not discriminate by genre. You can always discover something new with us here on Q. Coming up from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
PRI's The World brings you more than just today's news.
I had an interview once and the guy said, so what was it like taking the cameras to your village and the elders seeing these cameras for the first time? You know, these soul-capturing contraptions, you know, how did they feel about that? You know, we've had TV there for like 60 years.
I'm Marco Werman. Join us and hear The World.
Tonight at 8 on WHYY.
Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Of the two presidential candidates who came through Philadelphia this week, one did not commit a cheesesteak faux pas. Let's place our order with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Frank, it was Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker who bolstered his name recognition in our region, perhaps not the way he wanted. But Frank, he and Republican rivals will vie to enhance their standing in Ohio next week during the first debate of the 2016 political season. What are the keys?
Getting into the debate is a big key. This is always a very interesting debate about debates, so to speak. Are they there to help people gain name recognition, or are they there to have a debate among those who already have the name recognition? Obviously, in this instance, Fox News is running the debate.
So counting the musical chairs, 10 seats, 17 candidates.
So somebody like Carly Fiorina, who is the former CEO of Hewlett-Packard, will not be in the debate. George Pataki probably will not be in the debate. Governor of Ohio, John Kasich, probably will not be in the debate and so forth. The people in the debate, including Donald Trump, who has
Who's that again?
T-R-U-M-P, Donald Trump.
Oh, yes.
I haven't seen that name. He's a very modest, self-assuming kind of guy, but he actually has 92% familiarity among Republicans, by far the highest name ID of any of the candidates among Republicans.
So where does the aforementioned Scott Walker come in terms of name ID?
That's very interesting. Walker has a 53% name ID among Republicans, and we're tracking that nightly now. We have over 1,700 Republicans who've rated all of these candidates over the last several weeks, so he's just slightly above average. If getting into the debate was based on name ID, he might or might not make it. Now, he will make it because he does better in the horse race polling, and that's reflected in our data, which show that his net favorable rating, just his image, is right up at the top. He and Marco Rubio and Mike Huckabee and Ben Carson, those are the individuals who have the highest net favorable among Republicans nationwide.
So let's keep this straight. Distinguish between name ID and net favorable.
Name ID simply means, do people know enough about you to have an opinion? And net favorable is just what it says. Of those who have an opinion, what do they think about you? Is it pro or con? So Donald Trump has very high familiarity at 92, but his net favorable among Republicans is only 14. It's in the positive territory, but that's kind of down near the bottom.
Let's look at the demographic that most appreciates Trump and his message.
Socioeconomic status is inversely related to liking Donald Trump, which is quite interesting. As you know, he's let us know he's quite rich. He also went to the University of Pennsylvania, as we know, graduated in 1968 from the Wharton School, so he's well-educated. And yet it's inverse. It's the people out there in America who have the lowest level of education who are most positive about Trump, and those who have lower incomes are also at least slightly more positive about Trump. So he has what we might call a populist image. Despite the fact that he's rich and well-educated, it's the opposite type of person in this country who at this point has the most positive image of Mr. Trump.
Less crowded on the Democratic side, and let's bring it back to Philly. That other candidate who came through was Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. What do we know about him?
Among Democrats, half, actually 51%, don't know who he is or don't know enough to rate him. Second, his net favorable among the Democrats who do know him is a plus 29%. Which is pretty good, but Hillary Clinton, who is known by 93% of Democrats, has a net favorable of 59% among Democrats. Also, when we track over time since the beginning of July, when we started rating candidates every night on their image and favorability, Sanders really hasn't moved that much. We don't see a real surge on the part of Bernie Sanders like some in the press would seem to indicate. So he is drawing crowds, creating some electricity out there, but our hardcore empirical data don't show that he's really creating a significant challenge to Clinton at this point.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. This weekend, a documentary about poet Sonia Sanchez will premiere at an African-American film festival in Philadelphia. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports it's the first documentary about the city's trailblazing activist and former poet laureate.
When Sonia Sanchez talks about herself, she may not really be talking about herself, like in this poem, Middle Passage, which opens the new documentary. Sanchez has been writing poems for 60 years now, while at the same time being at the forefront of African-American activism, sometimes quite radical as a member of the Black Panthers Party, and sometimes more institutional as the founder of one of the first African-American study programs at a major university. In the documentary, she explains that her poems are a blend of her own experiences and those of everyone around her.
I use it, an I, but it is that collective I. It's every woman, black, white, green, purple, blue, brown, who's ever had to do this, who's ever loved, who's ever had to raise children by themselves, who's ever had to clean a house at the same time when thinking about a poem.
She was definitely more guarded about her personal life.
This is Barbara Addy. She's one of three filmmakers behind the documentary called Bad Sonia Sanchez.
She didn't think it was important that people knew about her personal life. To her, that wasn't an important part of her art or her activism. I mean, we didn't always agree with that.
Addy, along with Janet Goldwater and Sabrina Schmidt-Gordon, made this film about Sanchez when they realized she is known nationally, but little is known about her. She co-founded the Black Arts Movement in Harlem in the 1960s with fellow poet Amiri Baraka, and later joined the Black Panthers, a movement led by Eldridge Cleaver. But Sanchez had serious issues with Cleaver.
Eldridge Cleaver is not a revolutionary. He's a hustler. No man practices rape on black women in order to rape white women. That's not a revolutionary. That's a hustler.
She would later join the Nation of Islam, also a short-lived relationship. Janet Goldwater is one of the other filmmakers.
As filmmakers who come to the creative process, partly because of our politics, that's very intriguing to us to see somebody who's not buying a political movement without constantly critiquing it and revisiting her own thinking.
The filmmakers worked with Sanchez on the documentary for 5 years and said the only creative conflict they had was how many friends, colleagues, and collaborators were to be included in the film. Sanchez wanted her full support network in the movie. The filmmaker said there's not enough room for everyone in a 90-minute film. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Finally this evening, we know it's the most cliched phrase in professional sports, but it truly is the end of an era. Cole Hamels took his final bow as a Philly today. Now he'll take his talents to Texas. Hamels, of course, helped lead the Phillies to their first World Series victory in nearly 30 years back in 2008. We thought we'd send off our now our former number one pitcher and close out our week with a different Cole.
That's what you are.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas. We had help this week from Alex Lewis. And we say goodbye this evening to our intern, Maggie Freeling. Maggie, thanks for all your great work. Our news director is Eugene Son. At the controls this week, Adam Staniszewski and Diana Martinez. Joyce Lieberman is our radio engineering supervisor. Chris Cetullo is WHYY's Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
In every way.